Epa, novice.
Tedenski pregled novic iz Evropskega parlamenta.
Projekt podpira Evropski parlament.
Iz Evropskega parlamenta prihaja novica, da bodo za sezonske delavce, ki ne prihajajo iz Evropske unije, ponovem veljala ista pravila kot za delavce z evropskim državljanstvom. V državi, kjer opravljajo sezonsko delo, bodo v enem letu lahko preživeli od 5 do 9 mesecev, glede plačila, odpustitve, urnega delovnika in praznikov pa bodo zanje veljala ista pravila kot za državljane Evropske unije. Ko gre za socialne transferje, bodo tuji sezonski delavci upravičeni do vsega, razen socialnih stanovanj. V Evropskem parlamentu je pod pokroviteljstvom odbora za nadzor proračuna potekala strokovna obravnava o porabi sredstev, ki jih od različnih teles znotraj Unije prejemajo nevladne organizacije. Poslanci parlamenta so se obregnili predvsem ob nevladne organizacije, ki s podatki iz svojih raziskav skušajo vplivati na spremembe različnih evropskih politik. Od njih zahtevajo večjo transparentnost oziroma točen uvid v to, koliko denarja gre za takšne poskuse. Evropska unija je lani sicer 8275 nevladnim organizacijam odobrila 4,5 milijarde evrov sredstev. V štabu Evropske komisije za voljo boljše participacije na volitvah, ki se kanjo zgoditi maja letošnje leto, hitijo s spremembami zakonodaj, ki naj bi spodbudile večjo participacijo na leteh. Ta teden je potekal rok, po katerem morajo vse države članice Evropske unije zakonsko omogočiti, da lahko vsi državljani unije za sedež v Evropskem parlamentu kandidirajo v katerikoli državi članici. Poleg tega morajo članice Evropske unije vsem državljanom Evropske unije omogočiti, da ti v primeru, da ne živijo v svoji domovini, lahko tam volijo pod enakimi pogoji kot državljani te države. S tem skuša Unija k volitvam mobilizirati 8 milijonov ljudi, ki živijo izven svoje matične države. Španija s predlogom novega zakona o omejevanju splava ogroža dolgoletni boj in napredek na področju ženskih reproduktivnih pravic. Predlagan zakon prepoveduje splav, razen v primeru posilstva in hude ogroženosti zdravja ženske. Skupine, ki zastopajo pravico žensk do svobodne izbire, opozarjajo na dejstvo, da taki ukrepi pomenijo povečanje ilegalnih splavov v državi in posledično številne komplikacije ter ogrožena življenja. Številni evropski poslanci, vključno s slovensko Mojco Kleva Klekuš, so opozorili na problematiko. Dejstvo je, da sprejetje takih zakonov najbolj vpliva na že tako najbolj socialno ogrožene ženske, ki si ne morejo privoščiti varnih splavov, medtem ko bolj premožne lahko na poseg odidejo v tujino. Ker v Španiji ne glede na pozive ni prišlo do odziva vlade, se je pred špansko ambasado v Bruslju v protestu zakonu zbralo čez 2000 ljudi in zahtevalo pritisk španskih evropskih poslancev na domačo vlado. Glede na deklarirano zavezanost Unije človekovim pravicam bi bilo smiselno, da zakonski okvir Evropske unije preprečuje nenadne spremembe v zakonodaji članic, do katerih pride ob menjavi vlade in kršijo temeljne pravice. V Španiji gre za očiten primer delovanja, ki naj bi trenutni vladi Mariana Rajoya zagotovilo konzervativne glasove v državi, kjer več kot 80% prebivalcev zakonu dejansko nasprotuje. In take oportunistične geste ogrožajo dobrobit marsikatere državljanke. Marko iz parlamentarnega odbora za pravice žensk in enakopravnost spolov nam je povedal, zakaj je znotraj Evropske unije do dogovora na to temo tako težko priti.
The situation within the 28 member states, it's very, very diverse. And it's very, very difficult to harmonize, because behind this type of legislation there are values. And there are values which have been, they have a long tradition in different member states. And to change the value system in member states, it's something which you cannot do by legislation. People change, but by changing a law, it's not, or by harmonizing legislation in the member states, the European Union would not do good service in this respect, I think. So it is important that the member states themselves adopt legislation which would harmonize. It's very difficult for the European Union actually to bring about harmonization in this respect. But for the members of the European Parliament, one part of the members, they see that diversity in this respect exists, but they accept it. But another part would like to see harmonization and push very much forward towards harmonization. They expect that harmonization will come.
Glavna vloga številnih tematskih odborov je torej opozarjanje na tematike, ki bi po njihovem mnenju morale biti zakonsko urejene na ravni Evropske unije. Vlogo odborov znotraj Evropskega parlamenta in spremembe njihove situacije po prihodnjih evropskih volitvah nadalje pojasni Marko. Izpostavi majhno moč odborov ter dejstvo, da se bo z večjo raznolikostjo strank na evropskih volitvah delo odbora za pravice žensk še otežilo.
Currently we have a very clear governance structure in the European Union. Whenever we have a law, whenever we have a proposal to harmonize legislation in Europe, it comes from the European Commission. It does not come from the European Parliament. So the European Parliament cannot initiate any legislation. The Parliament cannot propose a new law on something and then it gets adopted and all member states have this. That would be a simple system, but we have it a little bit more complex. We have a European government, the European Commission, and they propose the law, and the law has then to be adopted in the Parliament and in the member states. So it's not so easy to get laws through. For the moment, when we have, we call this co-legislation, so because we co-legislate the parliament with the member states, and since we are not the ones, since the European Parliament and in particular the Committee on Women Rights and Gender Equality cannot propose legislation, we can just give a political statement but not propose legislation. We can just modify legislation which we get from the European Commission. I don't think that the situation will change drastically in the future, because we cannot initiate any legislation. We can just draw the attention that there should be new legislation, or there should be harmonization of the situation in the member states. But what will be more complicated for the Committee on Women Rights and Gender Equality is that within the new parliament, after the elections, many forecasts say that no party will actually win the absolute majority. So what we will have is a situation like we have in many member states, like in Germany, Italy, or France, Germany, Italy, or Austria, for example, that we will have a coalition government. So that will mean that we will have a coalition from Social Democrats and Christian Democrats. Now, that's a bit complicated for our committee, because in our committee, the dividing line in these areas is very often between Social Democrats and Christian Democrats. We are very, very often these two, center-left has a different opinion than center-right on these issues. In many other committees, like, for example, when it's about the economic crisis and how to deal with the economic crisis, in other committees, it is easier to find a compromise between the big parties in the center, between the Social Democrats and the Christian Democrats. But in the Women Rights Committee, Women Rights and Gender Equality Committee, it is no compromise is possible. Either you harmonize, for example, abortion all over Europe, or you don't. You cannot just compromise on it. And that makes probably the life of the committee in the future parliament more complicated.
V Bruslju je potekal vrh predstavnikov Rusije in Evropske unije, ki je organiziran dvakrat letno. Udeležil se ga je tudi ruski predsednik Vladimir Putin, pri čemer gre za prvo uradno srečanje med njim in voditelji Evropske unije od začetka politične krize v Ukrajini. O tem, kakšno vlogo srečanje igra v odnosih med Evropsko unijo in Rusijo, nam je več povedala Tanja Marocki, predstavnica Centra za evropske politike v Bruslju.
So summits help generally defining the strategic direction of Russia-EU relations in this case. And Russia and the EU agreed to have summits twice a year. The first one usually takes place around June in Russia and second one usually in December in Brussels. And summit provides generally a steady platform for a confrontation during which leaders from both parts can confront themselves on the state of mutual relations and on other important issues of the international agenda. And in this particular case, the fact that the EU asked to move the summit from December to January and to shorten it, making it an hour and a half event instead of a 1 day and a half event, is a clear sign of displeasure that the EU authorities wanted to send to Russia for its behavior towards the countries in the common neighborhood, especially, of course, in for what happened in Ukraine.
Pred začetkom vrha so bila pričakovanja precej nizka, kar je bilo vidno že v programu vrha, v katerem je bila izpuščena tradicionalna večerja voditeljev. Celotni vrh pa je bil iz dveh dni skrajšan na kosilo. Kljub temu so končni rezultati vsaj na nekaterih področjih precej uspešni. Poteko piše Tanja, ki izpostavi nasprotujoče si poglede Evropske unije in Rusije na njune skupne sosede.
The results of the summit, well, let's say, the forecast before the summit was not very very good. I mean, there was strong tension between the two parts. But the summit itself turned out to be indeed an occasion for a frank discussion between Russia and the EU on, of course, the list of differences that the two sides have. The main topic of the meeting was, of course, Ukraine, but at the same time, it was good that no blame game took place on Ukraine. And the messages from the EU-Russia summit in the end in the press conference appeared to convey a spirit of distension, let's say. Of course, it's necessary that both sides overcome the different interpretations, let's say, of that they have on the common neighborhood, the different expectations that they have on this region, and this is really hard to achieve, of course, because both parts look at the common neighborhood in a completely different way. Russia wants to, look at the common neighborhood as a region of traditional influence, where it wants to exert traditional influence, let's say, while the EU is striving to drive these countries closer to and by programs such as the European Neighborhood Policies or the Eastern Partnership is trying to somehow help these countries improve the quality of their democracies. And by improving the rule of law in a country, you improve also the conditions for business, and this means having, for example, better trade and, in the long run, better wealth for the citizens. So in the future, it will be key to see how these different views on the common neighborhood interact and how the different interests of the two parts compete, you know.
Putin je v enem svojih govorov znotraj vrha opozoril predstavnike Evropske unije naj se ne vmešavajo v notranje zadeve Ukrajine. Izpostavil je dejstvo, da gre pri tem za dvojne standarde Evropske unije, ki zagotovo ne bi prav dobro sprejela udeležitve ruskih predstavnikov v protestih proti Evropski uniji v njenih članicah. Tanja razloži, da je tole del dolgotrajnih nasprotij v pogledih Evropske unije in Rusije glede držav vzhodne Evrope, demokracije in človekovih pravic.
Moscow saw, sees the Eastern Europe as its near abroad. This is the definition that was used. And somehow Russia doesn't want to give up its influence on countries, so for example, like Ukraine or Belarus, where, I mean, there's a rhetoric of, how to say, of common tradition and of bond with between these countries, and the way Russia sees international affairs is often in a zero-sum game perspective. So if Ukraine, for example, gets closer to the EU, Russia sees this as detrimental to its power position somehow. So it's not willing to give up, let's say, its foothold on Ukraine. And on the other side, the EU has a rhetoric and you know, a long tradition to trying to you know, pacify the continent somehow, to create better quality of life for the citizens, which means, you know, stability and security and better conditions for everyone, because, you know, a stable Ukraine is better for the Ukrainian citizens, and also for the European citizens. It's better for it's in the interest of everyone. So there are these, despite the common rhetoric that Russia and the EU have on, you know, creating a common economic space from Lisbon to Vladivostok, and having this security area that encompasses the entire continent, they have fundamentally different views on this region. Russia has always has been complaining for a long time about European Union double standards, because it doesn't accept the fact that the European Union is trying to promote, for example, human rights, or that human rights sometimes are considered a deal breaker, like the disrespect of human rights is considered a deal breaker in some situations, and in some other it hasn't been considered a deal breaker. So this is a complaint that Russia has been making or voicing for a long time, but it's probably more instrumental than other things, let's say.
Znotraj vrha je potekalo tudi nekaj dvostranskih srečanj med posameznimi članicami in Rusijo. Tema teh pogovorov je najpogosteje bila energetska politika. Grški premier Antonis Samaras je na primer Putina prosil za nižje cene plina za Grčijo, ki je v sedmem letu recesije. Putin je obljubil, da bo o prošnji razmislil. Na vrhu se je sestala tudi delovna skupina za plinovod Južni tok, ki naj bi dodelala pravni okvir sodelovanja šestih članic Evropske unije, med katerimi je tudi Slovenija in Rusije. Članice so pooblastile Evropsko komisijo, da uskladi dvostranske dogovore tako, da bodo v skladu z evropsko energetsko zakonodajo. Reforma bančnih sistemov je ena izmed perečih tem Evropske unije in odločitve tega tedna se tičejo predvsem velikih evropskih bank, ki predstavljajo količine kapitala, ki daleč presegajo celotne bruto domače proizvode nekaterih članic Evropske unije. Spremembe naj bi preprečile plačevanje napak bančnikov strani davkoplačevalcev. Med kritiki predlaganih sprememb nekateri trdijo, da gre pri novi ureditvi za sistem zelo podoben ameriškemu, ki pa se ni izkazal za uspešnega pri preprečevanju kršitev in prenosa plačila napak bank na državljane. Govorili smo s Chantal Hughes iz kabineta Michela Barniera, ki je odgovoren za pogajanja. Pojasnila nam je, kako se evropski predlog razlikuje od ameriškega sistema in naj bi prek izolacije različnih tveganj bil uspešnejši.
Proposal we've made has
two aspects to it. On the one hand, it bans what is called so-called proprietary trading. That means trading for your own account. That is when banks use their own money to speculate and to make profits for themselves. It has no added value for the bank's clients, for the depositors, or for the real economy. And we suggested a ban on that. That is indeed relatively similar to what the Americans have done with the Volcker Rule. Actually, the American rules aren't in force yet, so I don't think it's fair to say that the American rules don't work. They will only come into force later this year, so they don't exist yet. But it's true that the Americans had all sorts of problems in how they defined proprietary trading. But we've benefited in some ways from the fact that they've discussed this for 4 years. So we've learned, if you want, from their mistakes. And we've taken a definition which is much stricter, much more narrow, to avoid the problems that the Americans had. It's important to say that that's only one part of our proposal. The other part of our proposal is that we're saying that above a certain threshold, banks will have to also separate between the deposit-taking activities, so the traditional, I bring my money to the bank and leave it there, or I go to the bank and ask for a mortgage or for a loan to set up a business. So you have to separate those traditional activities from the more trading activities. And this is to ensure that we're isolating risk, and if there is a problem in the trading area, it doesn't contaminate back to the rest of the bank.
Zakonodajni postopek Evropske unije je sicer dolgotrajen proces in pri delu komisije gre le za predstavitve predlogov, tako da bo do dejanske postavitve vstopitve v veljavo prišlo oziroma preteklo še nekaj let, opiše Chantal.
The Commission's role is only to propose legislation. We don't decide it. We make the proposal, but then it's up to the member states, what we call the Council on the one hand, and then the European Parliament on the other hand, to negotiate and to agree. And it's only when both sides, so the member states and the European Parliament, have agreed that our proposal can become legislation. So we'll see over the next couple of years a lot of discussions, negotiations, changes, amendments, improvements. Which hopefully means that at some point next year this will be agreed and would then come into force in 2017, 2018. It's normal that these things take time. It's democracy on the one hand, and also you need time for banks to adjust and adapt. So that's why it is logical and it makes sense for there to be a little bit of time between a proposal and when it actually comes into force.
EPA novice sta pripravili Anuša in Zala.
EPA novice.
Tedenski pregled novic iz Evropskega parlamenta.
Projekt podpira Evropski parlament.